another cold opening here to the Paleo-Protestant podcast. We are talking midweek in Holy Week, which may be the apex of Holy Week. We heard something in Hillsdale yesterday about the apex of American history and a certain year associated with that. So it's hard not to think about the middle of a certain time period. But we're going to use this time as a way to think about the church calendar and the way it functions among Lutherans, Anglicans, and Presbyterians, and the degree to which people are attracted or leave because we either adhere to or don't adhere to church calendars. So I guess I'll start with putting Miles Smith on the spot, since he has left one social media platform because of this particularly sacred time. But what's the state of play among Anglicans in North America when it comes to the church calendar broadly, and then also Holy Week in particular?
So I think the thing I first jumps out into my mind when you think about especially Holy Week or Lenten observances is how broad the kind of observance is. You know, some churches kind of do a very set, my parish does, I guess what you call a traditional Lenten observance, really just what's on the rubrics, what's in the formularies. Other churches kind of do it more communal. So it would feel, more like an evangelical church kind of getting together. There's more conversation about Holy Week and about Lent, about what's going on.
So before you go on, let me just ask. So the rubrics for those of us, maybe even myself, but listeners who aren't as familiar, that would mean using the prayers designated for that particular Sunday during Lent.
Yeah, but absolutely.
So it would be mainly you'd feel it, hear it, see it in worship itself.
Right.
But not necessarily in extra services.
That completely. So there's a list of there's in the our parish uses the 1928 prayer book. Within that prayer book, there's a list of prayers for different Sundays in Lent. So first Sunday during Lent, second, third, fourth. So you have other feast days within that. Annunciation is during Lent. So Annunciation, there's a prayer for Annunciation in there, but what's not going on is there's no addition to the prayer book during Lent. And I'd also just note that there's not, if you were to talk to me, I don't do anything extra during Lent. I'm not someone who gives. I probably this year I'm not drinking as much, and it's just a good reminder not to drink as much. It's not really, I'm not out here like I'm not giving up stuff for Lent. So I think a good way to distinguish what's kind of going on in ACNA is how Holy Week and how Lent's being observed. I think a lot of people view it as this is something we're doing extra. And I think another group of people, and I would probably put myself on this side of the kind of churchmanship divide, it's just something you do as far as the church year. And so what that does, I think, is it makes it more sober. It makes it grave, which is, I think, a good thing to be during Lenten, but it doesn't make it sentimental. I think that's really important. Taking sentimentalism out of Lent strikes me as something that's really important in our day and age, when liturgy has become, this is going to sound kind of mean, but it's become kind of emo.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that treating it as a part of a church year properly, and not something that you're adding to church, is it takes that kind of sentimentalism out of it.
So when you said, though, before getting to Lutherans, just a second, and I don't mean to dominate this, but you did say that there were some parishes where Lent observances would also be sort of, you'd hear it, see it in some way in conversations. So were you talking like, say, during coffee hour, more people are talking about it? Or is that like in Sunday school or adult ed? So you have maybe a series during Lent that has Lenten themes in it? Or I'm just curious, the informal quality of...
Yeah, that's a great question. My parish doesn't do a lot of informal stuff. We're kind of old and fogyish in that sense. We don't have a proper Sunday school hour. We don't have a lot of programming outside of divine service. And I like that. That's a personal thing. And my rector is someone who takes the divine service, whether that be morning prayer or Holy Communion. He takes that seriously. So I think that what makes that different than, say, a more evangelical parish is there's not a lot of extemporaneous talking about the services themselves. There's not extemporaneous talking in divine service. We're having Holy Week in the Anglican Communion. You do a series of evening prayer services. We're not talking about evening prayer while we're doing evening prayer. We're just doing the service. And I think that's good. Yeah. I know this, Daryl, a lot of Presbyterians, when they try to do Lent, there's a lot of extemporaneous explanation about Lent. And so it kind of comes across as seeming almost cheesy because it's like, well, are you doing Lent? Or are you just talking about something else that seems kind of cool? So that might be one way of just explaining the difference.
Yeah. Corey, what about LCMS, your particular congregation or parish, and what kind of variety or?
Yeah, no, good question. I think broadly tracks with what Miles is talking about here. So the Lenten services in the LCMS generally, in my parish in particular, the form of the service is no different. I mean, there are, certain collects for the Sundays of the church year, and those will be tied to certain themes during Lent. But yeah, I mean, if you were not aware, I mean, if you kind of came into the church unaware of it being Lent and not really knowing what that was, you wouldn't notice a whole lot different in the service itself. I mean, there might be some visual things. So, for example, occasionally there will be a banner or something in the church that is covered or removed during Lent. Or if you show up for one of the Holy Week services, on the weekday, for example, Maundy Thursday. So after the celebration of the Lord's Supper on Maundy Thursday, all the paraments, the altar cloth and stuff is removed from the altar. So it's just a bare altar. So there are some visual things, but no, it's, the evening services that we do during Holy Week are services that we would do any other time of the year, whether it's a Vesper service or a Compline service or a divine service with Holy Communion. And then certainly the Sunday services during Lent, similar, just a regular divine service. Now there is a tradition, and I don't know how far this goes back, but I mean it is the case that during both Lent and Advent, Lutheran churches tend to have an extra midweek service, so typically like a Wednesday evening service, and that's kind of one of those rare occasions where Lutherans don't follow a lectionary, so that affords a kind of topical sermon series, or maybe a kind of walk through one of the shorter books of the Bible, so that there aren't set readings for those additional.
So it's
services.
During the church. Eras of the church calendar when you're most Presbyterian.
That's right. It is a little strange that way. Yeah.
But so when you talk about during Holy Week and services, do you have a service each night of Holy Week?
So for the tail end. So, okay. So Thursday, remembrance of the institution of the Lord's Supper and betrayal, Friday, commemoration of the crucifix, Holy Saturday, the rest in the tomb, and then of course Sunday, the resurrection.
Right. And are there actual orders of service in your lectionary and or hymnal or whatever you call your service book,
right,
for those services, or are those ones that pastors may adapt from, say, the Vesper service and then add Lenten related right. or Holy yeah. Week related prayers?
No special services themselves, but the, you know, the propers of the day, so, you know, the collect, the prayer for the day will be, you know, geared towards that particular day. But no, the structure, the outline of the service itself and the elements of the service remain exactly the same as any other.
Huh. So, I mean, and it wouldn't be surprising to you guys that Presbyterians don't do Lent or Advent, though Presbyterians will have a Good Friday service. One of the CRC congregations we were in, we had a Maundy Thursday service as well. But the Dutch Reformed tradition designated five holy days outside of Sunday. Those were Christmas, Epiphany, Pentecost, Ascension, and Easter. I guess those were the five. And churches that are really adhere to the old order of service from, say, 16, 19, or 20, whenever that was, will still follow that. But the curious thing in the OPC is that, generally speaking, Presbyterians, especially conservative Presbyterians, with all the background of the prayer book and opposition to it, even to the point of killing a king, I mean, executing a king.
oops.
Yeah. I mean, so there's real suspicion about using red prayers following the calendar, even though also there's an attachment to Christmas and Easter and oftentimes a sneaking in of Good Friday. So it's not as if Presbyterians are indifferent entirely to the church calendar. Maybe American Presbyterians pay more attention to Easter and Christmas than those in Scotland or Ireland. And then, of course, national holidays enter into the fray as well. Mm-hmm. And depending on the degree of attachment to civil religion or the way in which it expresses itself in a congregation, you'll have maybe certainly Thanksgiving service. And then you will have perhaps maybe something related to Independence Day, depending on the, again, the temperature of the church. And Mother's Day, Father's Day, you know, these aren't necessarily national holidays in the sense that the federal government recognizes them, but in the sense that our national companies recognize them, we do pay attention. Not everywhere. It really does. Not here in Hillsdale do we do that. I don't mean to give that impression. But, it, you know, it's sort of it's a very lean church calendar among Presbyterians in that regard. But the more liberal or ecumenical have followed the church calendar more. And I'm not sure about Holy Week and the practice there per se. So do you, Miles, back to you, when you have an Episcopal structure the way you do, and the else, we want to talk about polity in future episodes, I think. But Corey, you don't have an Episcopal structure in the LCMS, right?
Not in the LCMS, no.
Right.
I mean, there's a kind of implicit Episcopal structure, but technically, no.
Okay. So are there bishops in ACNA, Miles, who like are more insistent that they're priests follow the calendar and even do more, say, during Holy Week? Are there bishops have reputations of being more or less church calendar aware?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, most of them will. I mean, almost every, I can't think of an ACNA diocese that doesn't have a pretty pronounced Lenten and Holy Week observance. Probably the biggest thing that's worth mentioning is some bishops will say, add something. So a bishop can do that. That, for example, in times of I think over New Year's, lots of stuff was in the news. And so there was, you know, you had what happened in the Capitol, you had the election. And so our bishop, you know, there's a lot of, obviously, especially in the more kind of parishes that are attuned to national news more, there's like, well, the church needs to say something. And this, I think you'll see this in seasons too. You know, some bishops might feel like there's something their diocese needs. And so bishops can do that, whether that's a, whether that's an appropriate exercise of episcopal authority is probably a discussion for another day. But for example, there's always the ability in a service to do something like pray the litany. Now you can't, some rubrics will allow you to skip it, but most of the time in all these services, there's things that can be added. So you're not going outside prayer book. So for example, the week after the Capitol riot, our bishop told us to pray the litany in evening prayer, which isn't something that's an augmentation of the rite. I think that's just an important thing to note. A bishop asking a parish or his diocese to do that, I'm sure there's some bishops that could do stuff speciously. I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. But a lot of times they're just saying, hey, you know that thing you usually skip that you're allowed to skip? Don't skip it this week. And so I think that maybe frames it a little bit about what gets celebrated and what doesn't. For example, Corey mentioned the Lutheran observances over Holy Week. There's a service every week in Holy Week in the Anglican calendar. You do evening prayer, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday. Holy Saturday service is an evening service for Anglicans. I think it is for Lutherans too. I don't know. But it's essentially a vigil. We do baptisms on Holy Saturday. And so there's a service every week or every day of the week. Not everybody will observe all those. Most of them will observe the actual divine service services, you know, so Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday. But a lot of parishes may skip those three evening prayer services. We don't. I'm thankful we don't. But, you know, a bishop can say, hey, make sure you observe evening prayer. And some guys may not. They may just say, you know, make sure you get the actual feast days or the actual divine services at the end of the week.
And there's nothing like that leading up to Christmas, every night of the week leading up to Christmas during Advent.
There's a lot going on, but no, nothing quite like Holy Week is different. Holy Week does function differently. And so it definitely feels different than Advent.
Right.
And so it's a busier time in the calendar.
Boy, that's really busy, man. You got to hope that it doesn't coincide with spring break so you can actually get a break. Not to sound too irreverent, but so Corey, the on the other side of that question about bishops is, since a couple of my experiences with the LCMS has been with more contemporary worship and the praise and worship element that has sometimes, it's probably died down in some ways, but I don't know. It seemed to be going fairly strong maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So would those congregations still observe the church calendar and also do services, hold services during Holy Week, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, my answer can only be anecdotal. But my impression is that even those churches that might kind of shun the liturgy don't so much avoid the church calendar. So they would, and it might not be obvious visually in the way it is in more traditional parishes, where, you know, when you enter on the Sunday of Pentecost, the paraments are red, or when you enter on Easter, the paraments are white. The more contemporary churches typically don't have paraments that change with the season, but in my experience, they still do acknowledge, you know, maybe it's printed on the church bulletin that this is the third Sunday in Pentecost, or even they will have certainly a Good Friday service, perhaps a Maundy Thursday and Holy Saturday service, but will almost universally, you know, recognize Christmas, Easter, and some of the other major feast days.
So, Miles, we've talked before about 19th century Anglo-Catholicism, or Anglo-Catholicism is sort of a construction of the 19th century, which could indicate that prior to the 19th century, Anglicanism was more low church than it gained a reputation for later. So are there low church Anglican parishes that are not praise and worship or evangelical, but that are, say, maybe holding, and it sounds like maybe the one you're in here would characterize itself that way. So it's possible to follow the church calendar, but not be high church in the way that the Oxford movement and Tractarians were, say.
Completely. A great example is this is the Diocese of Fort Worth is Anglo-Catholic, and very, very wonderful bishop for a long time was named Jack Eicher. The parish I went to was St. Andrew's, which was the downtown Fort Worth parish that was defined itself as an evangelical parish, very purposefully to sort of say we're the evangelical parish in an Anglo-Catholic diocese. It was evangelical, and most people who are Anglo-Catholics would say this is a low church parish. It would have looked to most evangelicals extremely high church, but it was markedly low church. It was a morning prayer parish. It did communion once a month. So the Easter observances would have been quote unquote high church, I think, to a certain type of evangelical, but it was just because they're following the rubric in the 28 prayer. It's a 28 prayer book parish too. And so they are not at all Anglo-Catholics. You're not going to get a sniff of John Henry Newman there. You're not even going to get kind of the Aloudian ethos, but they are going to follow the prayer book when it comes to especially the observation of the holy days at the end of Lent and Easter. So a great example is just the vestments are kind of a giveaway. My rector on most Sundays, because we take communion, wears a cope, which is kind of this more colorful robe thing. A lot of what you're kind of talking about is essentially sort of old high church or old evangelical, and they're not synonymous, but there's a lot more commonality between the two. Those guys are going to be wearing just a simple black cassock, a white surplice, which is kind of goes down to near their waist, which is kind of this white poofy dress looking thing, and a stole, a colored stole, which even Presbyterians will occasionally wear in older churches. So they're not going to look very colorful outside their stole, but it's kind of a tell. They're not trying to dress up. They're not trying to do anything other than just be, guess what you would call normal prayer book Anglicans. They would identify as evangelicals, and mind you, they wouldn't sound like modern evangelicals. And some of that comes from the taxonomy of the Anglican communion itself. But these guys are not Anglo-Catholics. They don't want to add anything to the prayer book. A great example of this is Ash Wednesday. Ash Wednesday is mentioned in the prayer book, but there's not necessarily a rubric for the imposition of ashes. So it actually in the 28 prayer book says the first Wednesday in Lent commonly called Ash Wednesday. And so, okay, well, does that mean Ash Wednesday is a yes or no? There are parishes in our diocese that would try to avoid Ash Wednesday. And there are others who would celebrate it. So you do have division, even among quote unquote high church Anglicans, on that. I don't want to give away my own. I'm indifferent to Ash Wednesday. There's not a real, at least in the Anglican rubrics, there's not a real, right for it. I'm kind of adiaphora on it in general, but it's named in the prayer book. So it's not anathema, by any means. So,
And Corey, it's really good having a Lutheran in this conversation in about American Protestantism, because I do think we may have said this before, but that Anglo-American Protestantism just dominates religion in North America. So I'm not just in any way trying to suggest Lutherans are an alien element, but just a different history and trajectory, which leads me to ask, you suggested earlier that maybe you don't know this, but I'll still ask, the history of Lutherans using the church calendar, because in Anglo-American Protestant circles, it's easy to sort of associate the church calendar with the Anglican world. And so depending on how you feel about the Anglicans and the bishops, you're either for or against. And then on top of that, once the ecumenical movement comes in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, and you see Presbyterians who are ecumenical, but also liberal oftentimes, or even modernist, in order to be ecumenical, they begin to adopt the church calendar. And so I don't know, because Lutherans have a different kind of history, I wonder if they've always been used the church calendar, always been liturgical, but indifferent to how Anglicans were doing it. I just don't know.
That's a really good question. So the church calendar has always been followed, and the basic structure of the liturgy has always been followed. And this is one of the kind of distinctive markers of certainly continental Lutheranism, certainly in the 16th century, that the quote unquote conservative Reformation was about conserving as much as possible from the inherited Western Christian tradition and only trimming away those portions that were antithetical to the gospel. So the liturgy was kept, except things that were found offensive, like the canon of the Mass with the implications of sacrifice. The church year was kept, with obvious exceptions for feast days that a Lutheran is not going to recognize. Some of the Marian days, for example. Otherwise it was pretty much kept. And then that very much became a kind of battleground as continental Lutherans sort of felt it necessary to define themselves over against Catholicism on one side and the Reformed on the other side. So, for example, following the war immediately after Luther's death, which the Imperial Lutherans lost, there was a concerted effort to reimpose certain parts of the liturgy on Lutherans, and they strenuously resisted that. Even though admitting that, technically these liturgical things are adiaphora, there's nothing in Scripture that says you need to bow here or that you need to say these words, but we're not going to allow Catholics to reimpose certain rites. And then similarly, a bit later in some of the territories that waffled back and forth between German and Lutheran, depending on who was on the throne, similar attempts by Reformed magistrates to prevent Lutherans from doing things like elevating the host after consecration. So they became pretty entrenched and said, well, since you're telling us we can't do this, we're going to do this, and we're going to be pretty adamant about it.
You got a Presbyterian streak in you there.
Yeah, that's right. And so that came over to America. The church here, the liturgy, the hymn books. There is an interesting kind of Lutheran Anglican entanglement. So some of the prayer book services are very much modeled on earlier German Lutheran services.
Huh.
And then, especially in the English-speaking world, the Lutheran hymnals just stole a bunch of Cranmer's collects, because why reinvent the wheel if it's already been done well in English?
That's really fascinating. So, the pure Presbyterian position on this is, of course, not to follow the calendar, except to follow the weekly calendar of a holy day every week, and to have two services. Well, at times there were three. There's a great piece that I sometimes hand out to students, and sometimes in Sunday school when I teach, written by a English professor at Calvin College back when it was named a college. And this is maybe from the 80s in Reform Journal, about growing up in a small town, Northwest Iowa. And it was a farming community, and they had three services every Sunday. So anyway, two, but you know, the way that conservative Presbyterians try to keep Sunday as a holy day, we rarely talk about it maybe in that way, although, you know, it's much more typical to talk about it the Lord's Day or the Sabbath. But it's to have two services, a morning and evening, and different, they're different sermons. So the preacher has to work harder in a way, if you're preaching two sermons a week. but I'm curious if, and you won't hurt my feelings, if among Lutherans and Anglicans, when you get together and talk about Presbyterians, you think, those people are kind of odd. Have two services on a Sunday, and it's just a little, I mean, is it sort of, oh, that's what the Puritans were sort of about, and that's the way Presbyterians really are. They're kind of puritanical.
Well, I mean,
or do you, could again be one of these things where nobody really pays attention to Presbyterians the way we started out. Nobody really pays attention to Lutherans, but
yeah, I mean, to the extent that I think a Lutheran would find that odd, that the only oddity is that both services are on the same day.
Huh.
So I mentioned that almost always during Advent and Lent, Lutherans will have a midweek service. Typically a Wednesday evening service. But a lot of churches have that throughout the year. And it's not simply the equivalent of, you know, the Saturday evening service. So if you go to Saturday, you don't have to go Sunday morning because it's the same sermon. Now, the midweek service is a different service, different sermon. And so it's not at all strange for Lutherans to attend two different services, two different sermons every week, just not on the same day.
Right.
I think that probably, I mean, the what people think about when they think of Presbyterians is, at least in Anglican circles, we're kind of divided by a common soteriology. And so anybody's kind of remotely catechized, I don't think even people who grew up in the Episcopal Church look at Presbyterians and say, oh, we have a fundamentally different view of salvation or anything like that. I think what's going on is they think we have a fundamentally different view of worship.
Right.
I think that's probably because I know in Anglican churches, you're a lot more likely to hear, you're just as likely to hear a nasty comment about Lutherans as you are about Presbyterians.
Answer me this, Daryl. So I know that in the Reformed world, Presbyterian world, you know, expository preaching through a book of the Bible is quite common. So if the pastor is, you know, going through, say, the book of Romans on a Sunday morning, what's he doing on Sunday evening? Is it a different book, or is it a kind of a continuation of the morning service? What would be normal there?
Yeah. In our congregation here, and I think this is probably, well, it's a book in the morning usually. Mm-hmm. And if it's a New Testament book, sometimes a pastor will then go to the Old Testament in the evening. But I've also been with pastors who have been preaching a book in the morning and do a doctrinal series in the evening.
Right.
Sure. Okay.
And then because our new Psalter hymnal that we put together with the URC, the United Reformed Churches, has the three forms of unity, that is the Heidelberg, Belgic, Canons of Dort, as well as the Westminster Standards in the back. It's a big book, as you might imagine, to have an entire Psalter as well, plus about 200 hymns. It means that in our case, our pastor did a catechism series. The Dutch churches, and this is probably true of the German Reformed as well, would have the evening service be a catechetical sermon. Okay. And the Heidelberg Catechism is divided up as 52 weeks, even though it's 129 or 27 questions and answers, but it's divided up to be preached that way. So you could also have that in the evening, which is the equivalent of a doctrinal series. But
yeah, sure, sure.
I mean, I think in Reformed circles, Presbyterian circles, the practice for me of an entire day of rest and just abstaining from all work, in addition to, it's not as if I don't watch movies or something like that, but watching movies that are more fitting for a holy day, a day of devotion rather than your normal activity, and doing reading that's more religious related rather than something else. And having family time and a special meal and whatnot is just it's a great thing to have every single week. And then when you have in our circles, there's been a lot of reflection on the parallels between, say, the creation week of 6 days of work and one day of rest, mm-hmm. trying to root the Lord's Day observance in the creation week itself. And then the Heidelberg also talks about it, in the fourth commandment. The fourth commandment, as Reformed count them, trying to think about the day of rest as a foretaste of the rest to enjoy in the new heavens and new earth. It gives it expands the calendar from a week by week deal, which, you know, when you see the moon come and go, you're kind of reminded of a 4 week cycle and whatnot. But then it kind of makes it eschatological as well. So Presbyterians have a kind of, you know, a potentially attractive liturgical calendar going week to week like that with the Lord's Day. And we even have some writers who've written about it, but we don't have any kind of Lewis who's done it or Tish Warren, sorry, Miles, who does the kind of eschatology of the ordinary in a way geared around Sundays. But I find the Presbyterian version of the church calendar, which again, I could understand why Anglicans and Lutherans might think, well, that's not really the church calendar. Come on. But that weekly reminder, and even the idea that every single Sunday is Easter Sunday, mm-hmm. Which, you know, some Presbyterian ministers and officers and even members would say is, you know, kind of peculiar, unusual, intriguing twist on it all.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is, I mean, in its own way, very, very much a Lutheran emphasis as well. Huh. So, for example, and I'm not sure if Anglicans do this the same way. So for other parts of the church year, you know, like for the season of Pentecost, you know, as we're counting, you know, if we're not using, you know, Latin names for certain Sundays, we will refer to, you know, the second Sunday of Pentecost. But for Lent, we refer to, you know, the so-and-so Sunday, you know, in Lent, but it's not of Lent. Huh. And so, you know, you count the 40 days of Lent, and it turns out there are actually more than 40 days because you've got all these Sundays, but you don't count them because Sunday is not Lent. It's Easter. Even in the middle of Lent.
Interesting.
It's still a feast day. It's a day of celebrating the resurrection rather than, you know, reflecting. Yeah. Well, of course it's a day of reflecting on our own sin, but it's not sort of coming to the fore as a penitential day, the way Lent is a penitential season.
Darrell, I want to make a note about the Presbyterian calendar, if you want to call it that way, especially how I remember back when I was a Presbyterian, I went on a mission trip to Mexico. It was the first time I really enjoyed a Sabbath. And I think there's something really interesting is the people who are most likely to really embrace Presbyterian-style Sabbath observance are the people who would probably are least likely to do it well, and that's Northern Europeans. there's a lot of de facto Sabbath observances all over the Mediterranean. And I went to a Presbyterian church in Mexico, which is not no matter how Protestant they were, they still were very much not Northern Europeans. It was really amazing because it was almost like their community orientation makes them do the Sabbath well in a way that I think that Americans, we're uptight because we're Northern Europeans. And so it was really interesting how they truly did feast on Sundays. Yeah. They truly did go to worship twice, and they truly did spend the rest of the day worshiply, you know, feasting and in community. And I just remember thinking, wow, these people seem really happy about the Sabbath. And I don't know if that's just about Mexico, but I do think there's something uniquely Mediterranean mm-hmm. about taking Sunday seriously and as a rest. And I'm not sure that we tend to associate, you know, Mediterranean's with Presbyterians, but it seems like the one can actually do what's a Presbyterian observance really well.
Right.
And so I think if it was viewed more like that, I think if you thought about the Sabbath as having to do with plantains and palm trees, it would be really attractive to everyone else. That wasn't necessarily my experience, but I think, you know, I am an Anglican now. I'm pretty convinced about the Anglican rule of worship, but I don't think it's so impossible to see that. No, there is something beautiful about taking a day of the week and really consecrating it like Presbyterians do. So,
yeah. So I think we're almost running out of time and don't want to keep people with parental responsibilities too long, but to close this out, since we've sort of talked about piety here and even personally, I'm curious, at least, whether, if you don't want to talk about your own experience of these seasons in the church year, you know, and I let's not get too personal about what you're repenting of, please. But I am curious if you think it makes, what kind of difference it makes in the devotion, at least, of people going to your churches. Can you, not that you can discern that, that's a very evangelical thing, I think, perhaps, is to look for the difference that spirituality makes in someone's life. But I'm curious, though, if, say, people, what they think about during these seasons or during Holy Week, and if it leads to a greater acquaintance with sin or confession or a greater trust in Christ, or if you have any kind of reflections like that.
I'll just go very quickly. At Palm Sunday service, there's a spoken, it's the St. Luke's Gospel, where you go through Christ's presentation before Pilate, and the congregation actually speaks the words of the crowd. He's speaking the words, "Crucify him." I remember years ago, a woman at a parish I went to said, "Oh, I'm not going to do that because I would have loved Jesus."
Yeah,
I would have been one of those people who did. I remember thinking, no, that if you know, this is sort of ironic way of talking across what it really is to believe in the Protestant view of justification, is to say, no, no matter what, I'm still every week that person who's saying crucify him.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of those things. It doesn't need to be sentimental, but it is really grave. And it always grabs me that I am still that person. And I still need Holy Communion, need Christ every week. So I think that part of Holy Week, it's always Palm Sunday, is something that's truly affects my piety.
And we just add parenthetically before Corey answers, we get that through a Lutheran hymn in our hymnal, "Ah, Holy Jesus, How Have You Offended?" We sing that oftentimes before the Lord's Supper, and there you get a chance to actually embrace that same sin that sent Christ to the cross. Yeah. Anyway, but what do you think difference it makes in your congregation? If that's not too.
Yeah. Let me frame it this way. I mean, there's definitely an attempt to cultivate a certain kind of piety in the different seasons of the church year. So I'm not sure how you divide up the 200 or so hymns as you have in your hymnal, but ours are divided up in a variety of ways, both seasonally and then topically.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just you kind of unmistakable if you attend church through Lent and especially Holy Week and Good Friday, and then show up again on Sunday. I mean, the tone entirely changes just in the hymnody. And then that's often, you know, supplemented. I know a congregation where the closer you get to Good Friday, the fewer of the stanzas of hymns will actually be accompanied. And so the congregation is singing more a cappella. And so it gets more and more sort of stripped down. And then that is a big contrast to, you know, the organ and the trumpets and everything on Sunday. So I think there is a real conscious attempt to kind of impress upon people that, you know, this season of the church year is a time to reflect on the crucifixion and the human sinfulness, which necessitated that sacrifice. I think when done well and done rightly, more often than not, it does have that effect.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about that and having been in churches where there has been more attention to the church calendar, it, you know, I think in the course of we have the supper every Sunday at our church, for which I'm grateful. But it's hard to emphasize one particular element of piety depending on what the sermon text is, but to go from, say, praise, adoration, thanksgiving, confession of sin. I mean, you can work it all in, but it's hard to stay on one theme, perhaps, in one service, and devoting one service at least, or which is what the calendar, I think, helps cultivate, emphasizing one aspect of the work of Christ or the Christian's relation to Christ. It's probably worth considering.
One of the things, and not to take us too long, I mean, one of the things that apologists, both for the liturgy and the lectionary and the church year, often emphasize, and I think quite rightly, is that it puts guardrails around the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I happen to like one particular book of the Bible more than others, you know, the lectionary requires me to actually address other portions of God's word.
Right.
And, you know, similarly with the church year, you know, we should talk about the advent of Christ and the birth of Christ and the suffering of Christ and the crucifixion of Christ and the resurrection of Christ. And I mean, I don't think most people would be inclined to neglect those in their preaching, but it's a helpful reminder that, you know, there are other things to talk about than, you know, the book of Revelation. and maybe you should get to them at least once a year.
Well, I'll let you have the last word there, aside from these last words, wrapping this up. But thanks. I didn't know how this would go, but I think it was actually useful. Well, useful for me anyway, and I hope for you guys as well and whoever happens to be listening to this recording. But thanks, and we'll do this again sometime. You've even given me more ideas for future topics, but we'll get to those in due course if the Lord tarries. All right, take care, guys.
All right. Thanks, Daryl.